from leadership. Grothman said the far-right Republicans who led the charge to oust him did not consider who would be his replacement. Grothman told The Morning Show that he hopes Republicans will put forward a speaker who can unite the party. He says the next leader also needs to help members in competitive districts instead of appeasing the most conservative members of the party. In weather for today, a frost advisory in effect for about another hour across the state. Things are starting to warm up, though. Highs in the 50s across the state today. Chance for some light rain in the north as well. Down into the 30s and 40s overnight, getting chilly. Possibly another frost advisory on the horizon. Things getting back into the 50s once the sun comes up again tomorrow. Same as today, a chance for some light rain in the north, but dry everywhere else. Dry and cool during the day on Wednesday. Temperatures still in the 50s, but there is a good chance that storms and showers will begin appearing in southern Wisconsin overnight into Thursday. Thursday, there's a good chance for widespread storms across the state with highs still in the mid to upper 50s. And rounding out the work week, it looks like more rain across the state of Wisconsin. More news available online at WPR.org. This is Wisconsin Public Radio.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Rockefeller Foundation, making opportunity universal and sustainable for over 100 years. And the Public Welfare Foundation, committed to advancing transformative youth and criminal justice reforms.
Hi, it's Kate Archer-Kent here. Thank you to everyone who donated during our fall member drive. You and your community depend on Wisconsin Public Radio for independent journalism and refreshing entertainment. It's support from people like Cynthia in Wanakee that makes this essential service possible. If you missed the drive, there is still time to join with your gift at WPR.org. And when you do, ask for your WPR belt bag for $10 a month or your WPR baseball cap for $15 a month. You play an important role in keeping Wisconsin informed, inspired, and connected. Thank you for your partnership. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Researchers at UW-Eau Claire expand their work at points around the globe and here in Wisconsin using ground-penetrating radar to identify potential unmarked mass graves. And in countries like Lithuania, it helps to locate where atrocities occurred in the Holocaust. You can call in with a question. You can share perspectives at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Harry Joel is a professor of geography and anthropology at UW-Eau Claire. Harry, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you very much. Thanks for the interest.
So for years, you have helped locate remains buried decades earlier in Wisconsin and across the world, and you use Pulse Echo, this commercially available deep ground penetrating radar equipment. How did you come to use this technology for finding unmarked burial sites?
Originally the technology was developed during the Apollo missions to land on the moon. And it's interesting, we're going back to the moon. But as soon as I started using this equipment, there's always an interest of locating unmarked grave sites. And even within cemeteries or out in fields in different locations. And so we've done it from an archaeological sense, such as Israel, where grave sites can be thousands of years old, all the way to places like the Holocaust and even within within Wisconsin, Potter Fields.
You know, you've been using this technology for three decades in your research. Has it evolved? Has it improved?
The electronics have improved. Back when I was starting it, a lot of it was analog, and we got some of the first digital systems out there. And so from an electronics point of view, just like, you know, laptops were developed at the same time, these radar systems were. And so we've seen laptops get smaller and smaller, and now we have smartphones, and now you can actually run some of the radar systems from smartphones.
Wow. I'm trying to think of something analogous in my life. Like, you know, is ground penetrating radar like having an ultrasound in a doctor's office? Like, just though that this is like high frequency radio waves looking into the ground to form images. Would that be some analogous?
Yeah. I mean, we're dealing in the electromagnetic spectrum, like you mentioned, radio waves. So we're talking, you know, Claire here is, you know, 88.3. That is the electromagnetic frequency that we put into the ground. At the same idea, when we go to the hospital, we're getting a variety of different imaging into our bodies, and we're using the same algorithms. You were talking about AI last hour. So that AI is doing some of that interpretation at the hospital, as well as on computer screens, as well as all the whole gaming industry is using the same algorithms.
Hmm. This technology can give you glimpses of what may be underneath the surface without disturbing the ground. How is this an advantage when searching for unmarked graves?
Looking for graves is often a sensitive issue in a lot of different cultures. When we work with Native populations, First Nations from Canada, and then as we move into such as the Holocaust work, using Jewish law, Holocaust, the idea that this tragedy has already happened, we're not going to excavate to cause another tragedy. While other cultures, such as Christian cultures and Muslim cultures that we've worked with, the idea of finding the bodies, excavating them, and repatriate them to the families becomes important.
Hmm. Harry Joel is with us, UW Eau Claire Professor of Geography and Anthropology, as we talk about the technology used to locate unmarked grave sites. You can join in with your questions and your thoughts at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Last month, you returned from Cyprus, the island nation in the Mediterranean. Hundreds of Greek and Turkish Cypriots disappeared in clashes in the 60s and during the 1974 Turkish invasion. How were you able to assist in the search for victims?
They're part of a network, but the Committee for Missing Persons in Cyprus uses bilateral. So you have Greek Cypriots and Turkish Cypriots that work together and that we work with, and there's sites that are identified by survivors or by witnesses who said somewhere over there I saw the killing, or I know the killing took place over there. And often these sites are so large that you can't just excavate the whole field. And so our job is to try to narrow that in, and if we can, identify potential sites for excavation. They have like 7 to 8 excavation crews going every single day, and they're trying to locate and repatriate these bones, anthropological analysis, forensic science. I've worked with a lot of different teams. This is probably the most well-tuned and well-oiled machine of trying to locate missing persons due to past conflicts.
I wonder, how do countries or commissions contact you for a potential scan project?
We've done a lot of projects, been on have different news sources that have covered our work, as well as publications by myself and my students. We have done a lot of work, and I try to encourage the students to publish at conferences and publish papers if they're so interested. We're at Eau Claire, we're an undergraduate institute, so we're not working with graduate students, and so we've worked with a variety of different institutes, and so doing searches, or I've met them at conferences, or just by word of mouth of, I've worked with Harry at here, that may be a potential location. And so I try to run a lot of workshops for these organizations, because I really want to work myself out of a job. I want this to be done by the country or the organization within the country.
I want to work myself out of a job. That's so interesting. And, you worked with the Cyprus Committee on Missing Persons, as you mentioned. How difficult is your work in disputed areas where national animosities are still present?
We work with that bilateral committee and bilateral people in the field. And I don't feel that. There's still some animosity that's there, but with the people I'm working with and their connections with their local populations, everything has been very positive in the field. And it's actually been impressive to see understanding of what, let's say, the world looks at this like versus being on the ground. We're working with the United Nations there, so that allows us to get in and out and through the borders with the equipment. And both sides are very, very well connected, and allows us to move smoothly to get to these sites. Even at the airport, as we're leaving, they said, "Oh, you're part of the team with Committee for Missing Persons." because they know this is happening in the country. Everyone knows.
Wow. Well, what happens after you've finished your investigation at a site? You know, what are the steps after that?
So what we meet with the members. There's three members of the committee, and one is from the Turkish Cypriot side, one's from the Greek Cypriot side, and one's from the United Nations through the International Red Cross. And we give our reports verbally and talk about those. They make decisions almost on the spot of where they're going to excavate. So the teams then would excavate, provide reports. If bodies are found, those are passed to the anthropological lab. A complete assessment is done. Samples are sent for DNA to a lab in the United States. And then that results is tried to link up with family members, brothers, sisters, wives, parents, things like that. And then the bones, through social workers and psychologists, work with the families, as well as imams and priests, to return the bodies for burial.
Harry Joel is a geography and anthropology professor at UW-Eau Claire. As we explore this work using deep ground penetrating radar to help locate buried human remains, call in to share your thoughts. You can ask a question at 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We learn how ground-penetrating radar technology is used to detect possible unmarked graves in Wisconsin and sites across the globe. You can call in with a question, share thoughts at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. This research at UW-Eau Claire is led by Harry Joel, a geography and anthropology professor. We are also joined by one of Harry Joel's undergraduate students, Sasha Kavaznik, who is a geography major. Sasha, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, thank you. I'm really excited to be here today.
So in July, you were among a group of Harry students investigating suspected mass graves of Holocaust victims in Latvia and Lithuania. And I understand your great-great-grandmother grew up in a Lithuanian village where hundreds of Jews were massacred. How did you process that history as you took part in this project?
Yeah, it was a pretty intense experience for me. So I'm a conservative Jew. I grew up in St. Paul in the Twin Cities. And yes, I'm the fourth generation in the United States. And growing up, I learned about the Holocaust, but my parents didn't really talk about it. And so I had no idea when we got there that these locations would be truly unmarked. I mean, they were public beaches, public parks. Some were cemeteries that had graves that were unmarked, but people were walking around enjoying their day with no idea that they were potentially standing on these mass graves.
What was your role in the project? What were your days like?
Yeah, our days were long. We got going every morning pretty early, and we were out in the field all day obtaining data, honestly, as much as we could gather. You know, we were only going to be in these places just for either a couple of days, and definitely just some of these places just this one time. So trying to obtain information not only for the communities, you know, the Jewish communities in the United States, but also the Jewish communities that exist in these towns, and providing information for potentially representing the Lithuanian collaboration that occurred during the Holocaust, acting as public reminders, placing memorials in these different countries.
You talked about different terrain that you were scanning and using this technology on. I'm just wondering, did you have to like ensure that you weren't working in fields where you'd have to deal with the, you know, any types of barriers in the environment? Or could you scan like anywhere, concrete, grass, forest? What about the terrain?
Yeah. So what's so amazing about the tools that we were using is you can use them in all different types of landscapes and environments. So we were able to use these tools at a beach, a public beach, where there were sand dunes. We were on the Baltic Sea. We were able to obtain information there. We were also, again, able to obtain information in the forest. locations that maybe had a rock that symbolized the people that were murdered in that place, but no other true evidence, no science to back up these eyewitness testimonies.
Hmm. Your great-great-grandmother, as you said, didn't talk much about life prior to emigrating to the United States. How did your family understand its history in Lithuania?
Yeah, so this trip honestly unmasked a lot of my ancestral history. I got a hold of my family tree, and that was how I found out that Rebecca, my great-great-grandma, was from Lithuania. And while we were in one of the towns called Shaduva, I had received a message that I potentially had family from that small town. In the early 1900s, there was about 2,500 Jewish people in this town. And right before the Holocaust, there was 700, and they were all executed in just a matter of a couple of days. So I was running up and down the cemetery. All the tombstones were written in Yiddish and in Hebrew and had been wiped away and many of them destroyed. And so it was really an incredible experience for me to be in this place where my family potentially was from, and to learn about it in person, because you can only read so much in a book or learn about things in a classroom. To physically be there and be retracing the steps of my ancestors was unreal for me.
Wow. I would imagine you took a lot of pictures of any markers that existed.
Oh, I am a photographer. I love to take pictures. My grandpa, Walter Kovaznik, was a really well-known photographer in the St. Paul area. Mm-hmm. Did a lot of weddings, lots of Jewish weddings, graduation pictures, you name it. And so I have just always been really passionate about photography. I probably took over 150 pictures at every site we went to.
Mm. We're talking with UW-Eau Claire geography major Sasha Kovaznik as we look at studying burial sites around the world. Harry Joel with us, UW-Eau Claire professor of geography and anthropology. Harry, your largest project has involved searching for mass graves of Jews killed in the Holocaust. Why involve students in these investigations?
I'm a strong believer in fieldwork as a transformative learning experience for students. And you could go back for 30 years of students who's been in the field. I still get emails from students every year who've been in the field and saying how transformative that was and allowed them to pursue careers that they never thought they could just because of the confidence they've gained. But I also think the field is also a place where you meet with people and you gain relationships very, very quickly. And these are your future, you could say, partners, future business partners, future people that you're going to come in contact with. And we're also solving problems for in-country partners. And so they realize that this is not something it's just for here. You are also passing the data on to the local communities.
I think about your two titles as geography and anthropology, and I'm just curious why you think it might be important for anthropologists to use this geophysical surveying method.
Well, I think, you know, within the geosciences, we have a lot of different tools. Mm. And I think it becomes more and more important that we use these tools cross-disciplinary. And a lot of the people I work with, you know, are in history or in different fields, and they often are not aware of these tools or what these tools can do. And so I'm trained as a physical geographer looking at coastal systems. I love Lake Superior. That's where I love to go work. But some of this work is, you could say, more important because it's cross-disciplinary and working with these community groups that are still looking to solve problems that are, you know, decades old, hundreds of years old, thousands of years old.
Sasha, there are local efforts in Eastern Europe to put up memorials honoring Jewish victims where they were buried. What value do you see in historic markers and memorials at these sites?
Yeah, so I think memorials can not only be a reminder for people and tourism, for people to come visit these locations in which potentially their families were murdered, but also to help educate the communities that surround these memorials, you know, to teach the generations that these events did occur and we should memorialize these graves to teach the next generations. Because by ignoring these difficult topics, by not memorializing the dead, what are we teaching those next generations? We're risking that the Holocaust could reoccur.
Hmm. And this month you plan to share the research you did in Eastern Europe at a conference. You know, what are some central things you want to share and convey?
Yeah, I'm very excited to be going to a conference. I'll be giving an oral presentation at GSA Connects 2023 in Pittsburgh. And I'm hoping just to spread awareness and educate people about Judaism, about how you can use geophysics to identify Jewish mass graves and how potentially people could use those techniques globally to identify other graves, help teach about, again, those tragic histories that are so difficult to teach about.
You anticipate to graduate from UW-Eau Claire this semester with a bachelor's of science in geography and a minor in biology. What could I ask? What do you hope comes next?
Oh my gosh, that is a loaded question.
On the radio, no less.
Yes, I am interested in so many different topics. Mostly, I love to make maps. So this project really tapped into my cartography skills, my mapping skills. Just that relationship between people, space, and place. I also am very passionate about the relationship we have with animals. So I'm not really sure what direction I'm going to go in. Conservation work, it could be Holocaust work. You know, I really don't know quite yet.
Wow. So many skills. It seems quite wide open there. Sasha, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
That is Sasha Kovaznik, who studies geography and biology at UW-Eau Claire. Harry Joel is a UW-Eau Claire professor of geography and anthropology, stays with us for more conversation about the breakthroughs in ground-penetrating radar. You can be part of the discussion along the way. Call in with a question. You can bring your comments. The number to join in is 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Ground-penetrating radar is a technology behind the identification of unmarked burial sites from Latvia and Lithuania in the Holocaust, to clashes on the island of Cyprus decades ago, to here in America on the grounds of former Native American boarding schools. You can join in the conversation, call in with a question, add your viewpoints. The number is 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Harry Joel is a UW-Eau Claire geography and anthropology professor leading research that uses ground-penetrating radar and stays with us. Let's bring in Eugene now in Biola. Eugene, hi.
Good morning. We have a part of the village here across the river that's called Mound Park. There were Indian mounds there, and the early settlers built on them or next to them 150 years ago, and it's never been excavated, to my knowledge anyways. If there would be an interest, then you could get a hold of the village office.
Eugene, thank you. Harry, how are you working with local tribes?
We've been doing workshops, and then we've also been out to different sites where we have an ask. We don't go to sites without that invitation, and we've often go through ceremony just so that the ancestors know we're going to be working in the area, and it's often trying to locate potential sites, and then if there's going to be development in the region or if they want to you know, just say, okay, this is the region we're going to put a fence around. When we've worked with Maori populations, that's often what's happened is a fence goes around that area. And then, you know, there's continuing of, let's say, sheep going through the area or things like that. But by invitation, looking at these sites is often the way we proceed and say, okay, what is of interest? What could radar do? What are other tools that could be done at that area as well?
You have consulted with Native American tribes to locate grave sites, and that work includes boarding schools here in the United States and in Canada where children are believed to be buried. How important to tribes is knowing what became of their people?
I would think there's a running theme through this work. It's people wanting to know where their ancestors are and to, you could say, memorialize them, identify these areas, these locations, to prevent any future development, as we've seen at some sites, and or just to have a place for families to go to acknowledge and mourn the loss of their ancestors. And so radar is one of these tools that could help identify there. And it's a tool, not the tool, that can be used. And I think we need to have a suite of tools to be able to take a look at these and use these tools properly. And that's part of why I like to try to get workshops and say what can and cannot be done as we move forward. Because the realization is that many tribes in both the U.S. and Canada have their own radar systems. It's a matter of, just like many companies, you lose those employees, or those tribe members become employees in other sections, and we lose that skill set.
Hmm. What are some of the complementary tools, as you say, that would go in tandem with ground penetrating radar?
In this country, as well as other countries, we have a suite of aerial photos, so you can see when the ground has been disturbed. And sometimes these photos are taken yearly. We know that when over years, the ground will often sink as the body decomposes. And we often have to think, okay, what's happening during this process? And then, in modern day cemeteries, they put soil down and then more grass on top. Well, you can see that if you use some tools like LIDAR. A lot of places in the United States have LIDAR coverage with high enough resolution. You can see these depressions. Other tools, people get buried with items. Hmm. And so magnetics can be used, electrical resistivity tomography. And so there's a suite of tools that we can use to do a lot of this type of work.
I wonder about like tree roots and animal holes burrowing down. I mean, those can disturb the soil as well. How do you decipher soil that has been altered by people?
And this is the very difficult problem, is that in the press and a lot of other areas, is this idea that every potential image of a burial is a burial. And I hesitate to do that. I take a look at it, as trained as a physical geographer, is if it's in a coastline, it should have coastal layering. And then if you disturb that layering, then that's more likely to be a burial than a rock or a tree root. But in many locations here in the Midwest, we have a lot of, rocks left over from the glaciers. And then we also have tree roots, and those have been interpreted as burials when they're not.
Hmm. With ground penetrating radar, Native American graves were discovered under a church parking lot on the Lac des Flambeaux Reservation in northern Wisconsin. The church has agreed to remove a building and restore the burial site. How often does that happen after a burial site is discovered?
I mean, that's happening, I think, as we, as a conversation, do we, certain cultures accept the idea of their ancestors to be, the bones to be repatriated, mm-hmm. to be excavated. Other cultures do not. And so that has to, and certain tribes, First Nations that I've worked with, some will and some will not. We had up in Manitoba where they excavated several anomalies as well. And did not discover bones at those sites. And other sites, they are finding bones. That's this trying to get this skill set. This is a relatively new field, and trying to get that better and better as we go forward.
I wonder your approach to scanning a site when you do see mounds that are visual, that you can see on the landscape, versus a large site where there are no visible clues on the landscape. Do you approach those in different ways?
Yeah, I mean, I think the higher the resolution or the tighter the lines, because what we do is basically put a whole bunch of lines together and then put that into a 3D cube. It's almost like gaming. And then you can go into that cube and take a look for features, because not all mounds have burials in them. We looked at several mounds that don't have, you know, they can be built for other purposes, effigy mounds and things like that. And so same thing as when we're looking for burials in a potential field, the more we know, the better. But to do a big, let's say, soccer field is going to take weeks and weeks of data collection. And so to get the right resolution that you need. And I often put it to, like, if you go imaging at the hospital, do you only want, you know, part of your body imaged? Or if it's a whole body, it's going to take a lot longer. And you want it at high resolution, so it's even going to take longer. And so we got to make sure we collect the data to be able to interpret what we are looking for.
Harry Joel is with us, UW Eau Claire Professor of Geography and Anthropology, as we explore his research locating unmarked burial sites and using ground-penetrating radar. You can join in with your questions. You can share your thoughts along the way. 800-642-1234. Harry, you've used radar in existing cemeteries. When is more information needed about where graves are located inside cemeteries?
In our present-day cemeteries, with a lot of them filling up, there are people in the past who have bought, let's say, two or three plots for family members, and those family members have been buried elsewhere. So there's two or three empty plots, but they don't know by records or records lost if someone else was buried at that site or not. Or I've been in examples where a certain individual wanted to be buried with their horse. So the horse was buried next to them. And now they would like that spot to be able to use for, you know, other individuals to be buried. And so it's trying to find where those sites are.
You're doing this work on a potter's field in Dunn County. What is a potter's field?
So this is something I did not know about. And the potter's field is where people at that time, what we would call an insane asylum, where people were coming back off, you know, world wars. What would today we would call PTSD, or other people in those institutes where family members would have basically said, you're in the institute, those individuals die, they have no family support, and they get buried in this field near the asylum. I mean, Laura Ingalls Annett was buried in this one. So there's a lot of different individuals. And then as well in Dunn County, the poorhouse was right on the other side. And so you have individuals buried in the potter's field, both from the poorhouse and from the asylum.
What does your project entail in that situation? What are you trying to do?
Well, it's multipurpose. We're asked by the local community to come in. And Sophie and Dave have encouraged us to work at this site. We've had several student projects to work at this site. And to go training, and we're going to go in a week and a half to go up there, and it's all new students who take a look at how do we collect data and how do we get that through, and then they'll work through that data through the next year and then present it at our annual student conference with the results. And then those results go back to the community, and then the idea is to put markers on the graves that we know are there.
How do you train up students who've never encountered this technology, never encountered this work? What is that training like?
We do there's some readings. I've tried to, with a colleague, write an intro. What is ground penetrating radar? And then most of it is hands on. I really think getting out into the field, getting the equipment into the students' hands, getting them up and running from a tech point of view, they're very tech savvy. It's now, well, how do we collect data from a scientific point of view, and how do you collect it correctly and setting it up and taking that time? And then it's basically time in the field, as Sasha was mentioning, long days in the field collecting the data and then start processing it at night.
Are there particular skill sets that students who succeed at this work have?
I think an interest and in wanting to step out of your comfort zone. So the students on my teams are not just geography students. I mean, we've had religious studies, we've had, you know, secondary education, we've had special ed, we've had students in geology, we've had students in biology. So it's students of interest. And I just, in all my classes, I do a short 20-minute talk on the Holocaust and the work we're doing. And I said, if you're interested, come see me. And that's often, you know, some of those students are the ones that join the team and join.
The jumping off point. Harry Joel, geography and anthropology professor at UW-Eau Claire. You can call in to ask a question. You can share your insights at any point, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're in conversation with UW-Eau Claire geography and anthropology professor Harry Joel, who has been using ground-penetrating radar at over 1,200 sites across the world through decades of research projects identifying unmarked burial sites, sites of atrocities. Call in to bring up your question. You can share your views at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Harry, looking to the future, this technology is commercially available. You mentioned our phones and our pockets also becoming much more powerful. And then AI, how is artificial intelligence potentially contributing to this work and this field of geosurveying?
I think a lot of it is, you know, the visualization tools that we use. I mean, AI is being used at the hospitals for that visualization after you image, you know, a body. We're doing the same thing in the ground. So when we're collecting this data in the ground, how can we have this technology be able to figure out, okay, is this a tree root? Is this a rock? Is this a burial? What kind of rules can we put in place to try to help make those interpretations?
Is concrete at all an issue for you, or when you don't have that natural ground and you have layers of concrete or other materials, can you still do this type of work?
Yeah, I mean, concrete, all our highways in the United States are imaged by ground penetrating radar to figure out if they're weathering or if there's voids underneath. And so often we'll see highways only ripped apart in sections. Not the whole highway. And so that's some of the radar and other thermal imaging that be able to identify those sites. And so we can see things underneath. We could also look at rebarb. So look at bridge decking and things like that. We could figure out exactly where that rebarb is and see what the problems are. And so it can be used for a lot of infrastructure work. I don't do a lot of that work, but it's being used a lot to do that. So we do image on top of parking lots to look for things underneath.
You mentioned also coastal systems, and you know, I'm wondering, you know, and how lake water rises causes erosion. How can this technology you're using, you know, to find burial sites also be used to find solutions to environmental problems?
So we've used it for many years. Everything from, as you mentioned, take a look at lake level changes, and I use Lake Superior as a laboratory for what's happening to sea level rise in Florida and North Carolina and the West Coast. I'm taking a group of students out to the Pacific Northwest in 2 weeks on a field seminar, and we're going to be taking a look at earthquakes, what earthquakes do to coastlines, and then those potential tsunamis that have come inland. And we've imaged all that. We've imaged 9 earthquakes in the Pacific Northwest, and we know exactly what happened in the Pacific Northwest during that time period. So we can start using this. We've used it, you know, in China, and we've used also in different New Zealand, Australia. So taking a look at different coastlines around the world is an important thing for the future.
What with these images, what type of story could they tell about coastlines?
So an example of up on the Duluth Barrier System, where we are having erosion happening during high water, we can take a look at this system and seeing how much it's prograded or built out over the last couple thousand years and try to figure out how that happened, when that happened, where did the sediment come from as we urbanize some of these areas and prevent flow of sediment coming from the north or the south. And so we've seen some significant changes over the past 30 years that we've taken students up there.
I wonder, too, can it predict a bit about what the future holds in terms of sediment and any vision based on what you can see from the past?
Yeah, I'm working with a group, the Park Point Community Association, and that's some scientists and concerned community members. And we work with the Corps of Engineers and others because we know that the Superior Duluth Harbor is a multi-billion dollar economic input into that area, and it brings a lot of resources into the Midwest. Mm. But on the other hand, the barrier system is eroding. So we need to protect that. And if we don't protect that, that harbor is gone.
Let's bring in Marianne in Madison. Hi, Marianne.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. Go ahead.
Doctor, I just wanted to thank you. It's especially poignant to me because today is Indigenous Peoples Day. I want to thank you for the work you're doing. I work with, I teach for Nobody Homicides, both internationally and nationally, and I know how much your work means to people from a modern perspective of people who've had family members going missing and how much the ground penetrating radar can assist in getting people answers. So just as somebody in kind of a related field, I just want to give you my gratitude and thank you for what you and your students are doing. It's making a difference in the world.
Marianne, thank you for the call. Harry, how heavy is the responsibility you feel to interpret the readings diligently and carefully?
I mean, we take those, you know, very seriously. It's a matter of taking a look at these, putting in the context of the information we know from our in-country partners or what's happened in the past, those other tools that we talked about. And then as we move forward, things like environmental DNA is now possible. Mm-hmm. Work with a colleague down in Madison. And what are these steps we have to put together to try to put this, forward to try to answer some of the questions that Marianne's put forward. I mean, the Bureau of Indian Affairs under earlier administration has now have a unit to take a look at this on tribal lands. And one of the tools that we've talked to them about that they have using now is radar, but also drones. Drone imagery can be amazing at some of these really remote locations that are large and trying to pinpoint some of these locations for the more detailed work.
Let's bring in Joan in Superior. Joan, what is your question?
Well, I'm just wondering what kind of topography that you can use this in. I'm thinking of a cemetery in Douglas County that probably hasn't had a burial since the 1940s that is totally overgrown with huge, huge towering pine trees. Mm. And can you get into a place like that, or does it have to be a field compared to something out, you might as well say, in the middle of the woods?
Yeah, I mean, we've worked in all kinds of areas, Joan, and often if it's grass, we can go through it, or sometimes we'll trim it all down in those areas. We go in and around logs. Some of the sites, the Holocaust ones, are similar to what you're talking about, where nothing has been to the sites and you've had trees growing up in that area. And so we have to basically work up and around some of these trees. And hopefully we make notes of where those trees are, so we know if there are root-like features in the subsurface, we acclaim that to the roots themselves. But we also know that sometimes people will plant trees on top of bodies as a remembrance, as a memorial to that individual. So we got to take a look at it both ways.
So you don't need to clear topography in order to do the scans. You work around and through the topography.
Correct. We take laser leveling of all our sites. So we have a 3D map of each of our sites.
Oh, okay. Fascinating. Harry, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your research.
Thank you. Thank you for the interest.
Harry Joel is a geography and anthropology professor at UW-Eau Claire. And earlier, we talked with UW-Eau Claire geography major Sasha Kovaznik. If you missed any part of our conversation, you can stream it. You can download a recording later today. Go to WPR.org/mornings. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.
We'll be right back.